You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Radical Aid Force is a left-wing aid group from Berlin. Since the start of the Russian invasion in Ukraine, they have been supplying aid and supplies to people and fighters in Ukraine and helping to evacuate vulnerable civilians out of the country. European correspondent Cameron Adams spoke to them about their work, including providing the morning after pill for women affected by the conflict. Here he is now.
So how did Radical Aid Force come about?
So yeah, when the war started, we all, we were friends, like the people who started the whole thing, and we all had the same idea, like right in the beginning of the war, to go first to the border and check if there's people who need a ride, or if there's, because there was lots of supplies which needed a ride to go there. And then just by coincidence, we talked and found out that we all want to do the same, and then we said, let's do it together. This is how it started. And then we met tons of people at the border. And then after a little while, we realized that there's no one crossing the border. So we decided to go also into Ukraine. And this is how we got all the structure in Ukraine.
And what kind of supplies are you providing?
We had a lot of medical supplies. We got like donations from hospitals, from private persons, from pharmacies. We got some medicals. Military supplies, like we asked people what they need. We went to a military shop and I talked to everyone who bought like military stuff, like is it for Ukraine? If yes, we can help you bring it there. What else is needed? We can help to equip the people who are not in the army and not well equipped. And we brought vegan food, because we met a lot of vegan people. I knew them from before the war because of punk scene, and they were asking for vegan food. They did a vegan kitchen for free, so everyone could go there, eat for free every day. Whereas we brought a lot of animal food to the shelters.
We brought like sleeping bags and tents and stuff they need like in the front line and around this area, or for people who have no more home, where the houses got destroyed. And we brought, which is also counts as medical aid, maybe, I don't know, the morning after pill and the abortion pill for women who got raped.
Can you tell me more about the morning after pills? That was just after the liberated areas, right? In Butcher and stuff like that. How did that all work? Was it just you knew people who needed it, or was it kind of through local community groups?
There's this group, was it the Sami group? I can't remember the name. And they asked actually for this special medication. They have like a center where women can go and ask for the morning after pill. So we started to fundraise especially for this case. And I think within 2 days we got like €4,000, and we
not 4,000, but we covered almost all the costs, like 3,700 or something.
And we bought like 600. How many pills were it?
550
pills. So it was a pretty good deal, because actually it's one pill is about €30, and we got it for
six euros,
something like this, straight from a pharmacy.
And do you still need that kind of, or do are you still kind of requested for that kind of medication? Or
yeah, a lot. Also the abortion pill, because the morning after pill you can only take, there's one which is like 40 or 24 or 42 hours, and the other one is 72 hours after, when like the time where you can take it. But sometimes it's already too late. So there's also the abortion pill, which they really need, but it's really hard to get. Because at least in Germany, it's hard to get, because you have to have a doctor who is with you when you consume it, for example. And yeah, you can't just get it in the pharmacy. You need the paper from the doctor or the hospital.
Are there any kind of other kind of EU countries you could get it from easier?
It's difficult. No, not really. I mean, even passing Poland is a risk, because we always go through Poland with a car.
listeners may be wondering, so, you know, there's been billions of euros of aid given to Ukraine by allied countries. Why is there still the need for these kind of grassroots organizations?
Because everything which is built up there, helping people, for example, to flee the country, it's made for humans like me and Johannes, for example. We are white, we are healthy, we're young, but whoever is not white, who's, for example, black, there's a lot of people, for example, from, like, we evacuated many people from Nigeria, for example, many POC who were studying in Ukraine, and they face a lot of discrimination at the border, and they cannot use the normal, like the actual way which are provided for white Ukrainians. And also pregnant women, we help a lot because for them it's harder to flee. Then there's people with disability, like, I don't know, we took people who lost parts of their body to the war. We took families who have disabled children with autism who cannot use the train or the bus because we need to stop like every hour or whatever. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of help and people try, but they forget people who are facing like structural discriminations. And there's, I mean, Germany and Poland and Romania, the surrounding countries, and Ukraine too, they're all very racist countries. So especially people who are POC, for example, face a lot of discrimination here and there. So it's easier for them, for example, to cross the border if we are with them, unfortunately, as hard as it is, it's the truth, unfortunately.
There's like so much money was donated to Ukraine to big organizations. I don't know how much of this actually went where it belongs or where it needed, because most of the money is just with some rich guys from rich big
units and stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of corruption. So we know personally of many people, how do you call them? Like the head of a unit, whatever, who work for the government. They just take the money they get from the government, which they should buy like weapons for their unit. They take this money and buy guns, but sell it to other units for a lot of money, make more money out of it. So it's very corrupt, and whatever donations go to the military, like the actual military or whatever, you never know where it actually goes to. So we also help this very left-wing unit, but we know where it goes to, and we know that there's no corruption within this unit. So, but every other money it's never sure where it goes. They are everywhere, then Kiev, then Kharkiv, and southern areas too.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, Hotutsklan.
How was your trip last month? That was your fifth or sixth trip, I think, to the country?
No.
We did many more.
We are not pretty good in social media, as you can see. We did, I think, 15 trips or 20 trips.
Even more, I don't know.
But the last one, when was it? It was last month. Everything went fine, but on this trip, we already had to face the problem that we don't have enough donations in form of supplies to fill up the full van. So we go there with a half full of van, bring donations, bring medical stuff, get refugees out. But our main goal actually is to be as efficient as possible. So have a like full van and go there and bring people out. And now we have this problem that we have no donations left. Like, yeah. We have like 5 boxes here at the moment, and it makes no sense to go this distance with 5 boxes, because the fuel prices are incredible. One trip costs about 500 euros fuel. That's the main problem right now.
Why is it dropped off? Why is support dropped off, do you think?
I think people are used to the war. This is a point. Like, they're like, oh, I donated, now it's fine. Or I read it every day in the news, it's like nothing special anymore. And people are afraid of this energy crisis, of the high prices of the gas or heating. I think this is a reason as well.
How have your trips changed since you started going to kind of now?
it changed a lot because we had to, we realized it's like not enough to just go to the border. And then if you go to Lviv, there have to be people who bring it further to the east. So we decided to do it on our own or build like a
network
to do it ourselves with other groups. And yeah, it's a lot of work, a lot of organization.
We try to not go where like the actual Russian military is, you know, like we go to different areas and we ourselves updated with people who have like a really good overview and knowledge about how this war is working and developing and where the Russians might go. So there's places we should avoid. And we're also very careful. So if one of us is going to the actual front line to deliver stuff, like this morning after pill or abortion pill, for example, we're constantly in touch and we're constantly in touch with the person who's going, the person who are with them, and then also with people who are at their destination. So we know that they reach there and then there's like a certain time. If we don't hear back from our person or the other way around within like 2 or 3 hours, we call all the people we know in that area. So I think ever since we built up these structures and ever since we understand the war better and seen more, it's easier for us.
And if listeners want to learn more about you guys, where can they do that?
Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on, where are we?
Twitter.
We have a GoFundMe page, do we? Yeah. Yes, we have PayPal.
And if you want to like have any questions, just give us a short message like on Instagram or an email.
Yeah,
we're always happy to answer or to work with people or whatever.
The Radical Aid Force are doing another trip on Monday, looking to fundraise around for more morning after pills, that is. You can check them out at their GoFundMe page.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.